Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Morning. You're right. It's hot straight from the kettle. Burns all the way down. I'll leave that for a moment. Me? Yeah, I'm all right, other than that. Yeah, fine, thanks. Hope you guys are all right. I genuinely do. The glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters, the best people on earth, basically. Like the stream. Do click the like button. That makes a big difference to the algo. We're completely at the mercy of the algo. Everyone is. Well, if you're making content on the old internets, that is. Do hit the like button, please do. You know, make sure you like it, sub to the channel. Get the bell on. Get involved in the chat. Why not? Do the poll. I think we've got a poll today. We should have a poll every day, don't we? That's free. Consider sending in a Rumble Rant or Super Chat. Got nothing to lose. I'll definitely read it out. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning. Yeah, I'm all good.
Good. The disembodied voice of the all-powerful editor there. Should we stop fanning about? Let's stop faffing about. Let's just get straight into it. What's the legacy corporate mainstream media banging on about this morning? What does Fleet Street, what are they trying to tell you is important or what isn't? That evil cabal of Fleet Street editors. All right, what have we got? We've got Iran war back on and Camp Bin Face exclusive. So it's Trump, Iran, NATO day and more of Nigel and Bin Face. The Count Binface, first Baron Binface, that is. Real name John. All right, let's have a look. The Metro. Ooh, straight off the bat with the Metro. It's a bit early. It's a bit warm and a bit early for that. Nope. Making my head swim. Okay. Iran war back on after new airstrikes. Trump tears peace hopes into pieces. So, yeah, right. So it's probably the biggest or second biggest story of the day. Trump and NATO and Iran. So there's this big NATO meeting going on in Ankara in Turkey. And everyone in NATO is there, or nearly everyone. Of course, the president is the top dog there by a long, long margin. And Trump's been saying various things, interesting things. One of the main things, other than Iran, is about Greenland. He's talking all about Greenland again, but this time not any sort of annexation or sort of military incursion in any way, just that he wants to buy it off of Denmark. Did we talk about this briefly yesterday? Do you remember, Harry? I can't remember if we did, because I talked about it on the State of Politics. Do you remember?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'll just briefly say, because it's not the biggest element of this story, of the various things Trump's been saying in Ankara. So he wants to buy it. It's of strategic importance to the United States. Denmark can't defend those waters. And make sure there's no one being a dick in the chat. I just glanced down. Someone says there's someone being a dick in the chat. So check that out, Harry. Ban them if needs be. I ban people. I block people on Twitter and stuff. I don't care. You're being a complete dick. Yeah, banned. Yeah. Okay. Greenland. He wants to buy Greenland. I could have sworn I talked about it. The way it was. Yeah, it's a millstone. I did. It's a millstone around Denmark's neck for a lot of them. They can't afford to. So Trump wants to buy it. The other thing was Spain. He was saying about how Spain is just going to stop trading with Spain. Just completely stop trading. He said to one of his advisors, like on camera, said, don't even speak to Spain. Just stop trading with them entirely. That could be a real worry for Spain. Apparently, Spain did come out and say, no, as far as we're aware, everything, all the deals we've got with the United States are still ongoing. It'd be very, very difficult just to stop, just like that, just in one day, just boom, anything coming in or going out from between the United States and Spain just stops. That's not actually possible, is it? Like, logistically, physically. Anyway, Trump could certainly ramp it down if he wanted to. But the big one is Iran. So, it's all back on. It's all back on. Last night there was loads of firing again. There was something like 90-odd targets were hit in Iran by the United States. Look, live. US launches strikes on Iran for second night as Tehran targets bases in Kuwait, Bahrain and Qatar. So the war's back on, basically. And what Trump said, Trump said some funny thing. Well, not funny, ha-ha. Sorry, just funny, sort of odd. Well, not odd, that's not the right word. Funny and odd are not the right word. He said some interesting, relatively bellicose things. He said that Iran was a bunch of psychos, basically. I paraphrase. He said they were cuckoo. I did this, they're cuckoo. They're a bunch of, oh, look, they're scum, that's it. He said, they're scum. Do you know what scum means? They're scum, that's what he said. They're sick, vicious, violent people, or their leaders are. He said that about the people and then went, their leaders. You have to be careful not to like sort of tarnish the tens of millions of people, many of whom will be completely innocent, normal people trying to get on with their lives. But at least their leaders are sick, vicious, violent people, says Donald Trump, as he promises to hit regime hard. He said, you just can't deal with them. You can't deal with them. That they'll come out and they'll just lie and they lie and they lie. He said, you know, I can have a conversation with Mark Rutger or someone. We can come to an agreement. And then when you go out into the wider world and start talking to the press, you both talk about what you just agreed about. But you can't do that with the Iranians. You strike some sort of deal with them behind the closed doors. And then they'll immediately go out into the world and talk to the press or something. And to say, no, none of that happened. I mean, I'm sure the United States aren't like particularly the fairest good faith partners of all time. No big nation is. But Iran seem to be, don't they, completely and utterly untrustworthy. But there you go. Both sides are claiming that the other one is completely untrustworthy. Both sides saying this recent exchange of fire, that the other one started it. The reports from the Western legacy mainstream media are that that Iran started it by firing on some ships in the Straits of Hormuz a couple of days ago, like a Saudi one, a Qatari one, and one of the other Arab neighbour ones. If you think all Western news is just complete propaganda, can never, ever, ever be trusted on anything ever, I guess you take that with a pinch of salt, but otherwise, the narrative is that Iran fired first and then America retaliates and then Iran retaliates again and then America, two nights now, like last night, not last night, just gone, the night before, America was supposed to have hit something like 70 targets inside Iran and last night more like 90 targets, including loads of their small boats. The Iranian Navy, they haven't got any big warships left, have they? But they've got speed boats, those small attack boat things. Still got loads and loads, dozens, maybe even in the low hundreds of those. And the Americans just blowing up dozens of those, or scores of them, in fact. Okay. So he said, when asked, is the memorandum of understanding over? He basically said, yeah, in my mind, yeah. You can't trust them. They're crazy people. They're sick and violent and vicious. And it's over. Here's another little mini headline. Then President launches rant at NATO allies and pledges economic war on terrible Spain. He's got a real problem with Spain. Apart from anything else, Spain didn't allow the United States to use any of its air bases, I believe, when the war first started in February, or until now as well. That very, very much annoyed the Donald. And they're refusing to increase their NATO spending, just refusing to. And their leader is, their government is very, very left-wing. I mean, full socialist, really. So there's nothing there for Trump to like or warm to, is there? And he just says they're terrible and he'll just cut all trade with them. Whether he will or not, whether that's a bit of bluster or not, who knows, but there you go. All right, the peace hopes are in pieces. The Iran war is back on. Still, without boots on the ground, will that regime ever collapse? It feels unlikely, doesn't it? Okay, the Daily Star, the sloppiest of the slop, arguably. We got Count Binface. Here we go. Straight into it. Hashtag bin for the win. Hashtag binevitable. Hashtag Bindependence Day. Count Binface exclusive. What can I offer? Well, I'm not Farage. Okay, so a bit of the story, a bit of all the talk around it. I think some people need to be reminded that Count Binface, what's his real name? John Harvey, is it? I'll remember in a minute. I think it's Harvey. John Harvey. Remember, the Count Binface is a joke. The whole thing is just an attempt at comedy. Whether you find it funny is something else. But it is an attempt at comedy. He's a novelty candidate. I find it a little bit funny that some people sort of take it seriously. What does John Harvey really think, though? What would his policies be? No. It's a silly thing. You know, like people in Reform, like what strategies are best to beat Count Binface? What? Trying to destroy his character and stuff. It's a joke. Have you lost sight of the fact that it's a comedy novelty candidate? I suppose one thing, say, before we go start going down that route and start talking about all of that. Is there any possibility he beats Nigel? In my opinion, no way, right? No, Count Binface will either get a tiny number of votes, like, you know, 30 votes, or if there's some sort of big push and some sort of anti-Nigel feeling in Clacton and all that thing, maybe he'll get a couple of thousand votes. Maybe. That's my prediction, and that's my sort of call. That maybe he gets like a couple of thousand votes at absolute most. Either way, I feel like I could be wrong. When this all plays out, I think in August, it's set to play out in August. Maybe it'll be a turn up of all time and Binface wins Nigel. It's not a zero probability thing. He could win. Nothing in the laws of physics in the universe to stop Binface winning, but it's not going to happen, right? Nigel will still easily win. So all this stuff about, you know, trying to actually attack him, trying to take it seriously, Nigel trying to say this is a serious by-election. No, it isn't. No, I'm sorry, but no. Although, talking about the odds, I thought it was very interesting to see, if you just Google what the odds, what the various bookies giving Binface, sorry, the Count Binface, First Baron Binface, go Binface, what are his odds? I would have thought that they were like, they'd be 500 to 1, 10,000 to 1. They're not. I saw one bookie this morning, it was 5 to 1. 5 to 1. That's remarkable to me. Yesterday, Dan Tubb in the office, he got a bet, I think it was like 11 to 1 or something. And then later in the day, I saw again, it was 7 to 1. And then this morning, even on a couple of papers, it's reported something like 7-2-1 or 5-1. I mean, that still means that Nigel's like 80%, 80, 90% probability to win. In other words, he's going to win. Almost certainly, unless there's some sort of big swing in sentiment in Clacton towards the Count Binface, First Baron Binface. Which could happen, right? It's not a zero probability thing, but it just, I wouldn't put a penny on Binface to win, put it that way, personally. It's a novelty candidate. The whole thing is an absurdity. That's the point of it. He's not going to win, but all right. Okay. So with all that said, there's some reports that Lawrence Fox tweeted that he was going to stand. I mean, why? Why are you doing that? Don't do that. It'll be so clear. Well, there'll probably be a number of small parties that will just refuse to accept the sort of poetic beauty of just Nigel and Binface on the ballot. There'll probably be a number of, like, there's loads of small parties, aren't there? Like some sort of like some sort of constitutional party or some sort of like environment party or some sort of popular people, communist popular people's front of Clacton type party, you know, this sort of thing. There'll probably be a bunch that stand in it, actually. But it would be nice and clean, wouldn't it, if it was just Bin Face and Nigel. The next thing I would say to talk about it is there's some people like on Twitter or in the world, in the sphere, talking about it, that think this whole thing is in terribly bad taste. Yeah, it is, yeah. And that it's not funny. It's not funny. And it's wrong-headed to sort of back Bin Face. Because our country is facing such existential crisis and the rape crisis and all of that. And fundamentally unserious if you show any sort of support for Bin Face, all that sort of thing. I think those people are failing to understand what's going on here. I really do. I think those people, again, have lost perspective. They don't understand what a by-election is, what this by-election is. You're fundamentally unserious. Stop ganging up on Nige. No. If this was a general election and power was on the line, who got to control government? Who got to set policy for the country for the years ahead? Then it would be deadly serious. Every seat matters. It would be really quite deadly serious. I mean, that's what Nigel's angle is and Reform's angle is. Despite the main parties not standing, this is a serious election. It's not a fake election, as Olu Kemi Badenoch said. It's real. It's serious. No, it isn't. This was a political stunt. Power isn't on the line. Who controls government isn't on the line. This was a political stunt, a machination by Nigel, for Nigel, in aid of Nigel. None of our women folk are going to be saved one way or the other, depending on the result in this by-election in Clacton. So that argument's nonsense. Well, what about the existential crisis of the invaders? That's not what's on the line here. This is about Nigel trying to outmaneuver a parliamentary standards committee. It's not about government. Okay, so that argument's nonsense. Don't give me that argument. Then there's the whole question, isn't there, of the other parties not standing. Nigel and I see a few sort of Reform orbiters on Twitter and stuff saying, oh, they're scared. Nigel saying it. They're scared of Nigel. No, that's not, again, that's not really what's going on here. If and when there's a second referendum, by-election, then they will stand in it. It's not that they're so scared of Nigel that they won't stand. That's not the gambit here. That's not what's going on, is it? That's not their calculation. It's that Nigel's pulled some sort of political stunt and they're trying to undermine it by not even standing in it. That's a different thing, isn't it, to being scared. So scared of losing to Nigel at the ballot box. No? There's another by-election, they'll stand in that. Not being about being scared. Or Nigel saying the other parties are showing contempt for like the people of Clacton or for the democratic process. No. I think you're showing contempt to them, to the process, by doing this. By resigning and triggering another by-election unnecessarily so that you can play your games with the parliamentary standards committee stuff. So you can try and do misdirection about your finance problems. I think that holds the people of Clacton in contempt, actually. It's a classic thing, isn't it? You do something bad and the person you hurt, and you point the finger at the person you've hurt and said, that was your fault. Classic thing, a man beats his wife. Now look what you made me do. Really? Really? It's the other party showing contempt for the people of Clacton. No, it isn't. This is a serious by-election, Nigel's insisting. No, it isn't. No, it really isn't. Okay, we'll talk about it more throughout the show, I'm sure. King Arthur. So here we go. Little bit of Wimbledon. I know you guys don't really like sports ball very much. I don't follow tennis particularly. I'd never heard of him until yesterday. He's an English dude, I believe. 23. He was only a wild card to get into Wimbledon, i.e. only sort of scraped in. read somewhere this morning, he's only ever won 2 Grand Slam matches ever before. So he's a young English dude, and he's got to the semi-finals. He won his quarter-final at Wimbledon against like someone who's really quite good, like number 7 seed or something like that. Something like that. So not completely impossible he wins Wimbledon. Well, it'd be nice to have an Englishman win Wimbledon, because we haven't had that since God knows when. Really, God knows when. 100 years ago or something. What would it be? Fred Perry? I don't know. Did Fred Perry even ever win it? I don't know. I don't follow tennis. I don't know about the history of tennis enough. But well, we had Andy Murray won it in like, what, 2013 or something. Or 2014 or something. Andy Murray, but he's Scottish. I'm not allowed to throw any shade at Scots ever, because the Daily Record will be all butthurt about it if I say anything about Scottish people. And their smack problem. So he... there we go. He... let's have another... There we go. Look, he's on the front pages of a fair few of them. Yeah, King Arthur. He could win it. He'll be the first Englishman in a long time if he did. Probably won't. Wimbledon fairy tale. Oh, Arthur Ferry, that's his name. It's a fairy tale. Okay. All right, that's all I'll say. I don't particularly care about tennis, and I don't think you do, really. All right, what's next? The Mirror. Oh, the mirror's Trump derangement... Farage derangement syndrome is off the scale, isn't it? Sleaze probe election farce. That was one thing I'll say. I keep using the word sleaze as though it's a byword for any sort of suggestion or hint of any sort of corruption. Funny how words, the usage of words change, isn't it? It used to be, or it still is, isn't it, really, that sleaze should be used in connection with something that's actually sleazy, i.e. probably sex-related scandal. But now it's being used, doesn't it, as just any scandal. A sleaze probe. There's no suggestion that Nigel's done anything sleazy in the real usage of the word sleaze. Is there? Not like a... Well, at least in this current iteration of scandals, there's nothing about his sex life or anything, is there? But they'll say that. Nigel's reform is under investigation by a sleaze watchdog. Sleaze probe election fast. Bin him off. Voters urged to teach Farage a lesson at the poll. Urged by who? What do you mean? By you? By the Mirror? Reform boss mocked after quit stunt backfires. It's a bit of a stunt. And it is sort of backfiring. Okay, The Express is a good paper. You can read your Express now. All right. Farage, Labour and Tories running scared. Yeah, right. Yeah, yes, that is cope. That's pure cope. You're scared. They're scared. No. Particularly the Tories, because I suppose, in all honesty, in all seriousness, the other party that's most likely to beat Nigel Farage would be the Tories or Reform. Sorry, Restore. The number of times I say Restore when I mean Reform and vice versa. Because Clacton is sort of very, very sort of white working class. It's quite actually a poor town, isn't it? It's really quite a poor... What's the sort of the words they use these days? Sort of underprivileged or deprived. Like loads and loads of white working class that were forced out of East London and Essex by the invasion of foreign people. People that used to live in the East End. Mile End, Bromley by a Bow, Plaistow, whatever. And now they're just purely Pakistani or Indian or Bangladeshi communities. They're forced out into Essex. And then further and further and further east. Until places like Clacton are displaced white people. Displaced. In their own country. In their own ancestral homeland. So they're likely, usually much more likely to vote to the right. So it will be Tories and Restore. But yeah, Nigel saying all the other parties are running scared. Surely no one's really believing that, unless you're an actual reformtard and you do or say, you've got no shame when you do or say anything. You do or say or make any argument that's pro-reform and against reform's enemies, regardless of how obvious nonsense it is. Running scared. Okay, Nigel, yeah, yeah, they're running scared. Sure. They're scared of you. That's what's going on, yeah. Right, the Daily Mail, pure slop. You're a globalist slop trying to pretend it's not. Farage, being faced by election is deadly serious. Sure about that? If the one thing it's not is that it's serious. Nothing serious about it. King Arthur roars into Wimbledon semi-finals. The once and future tennis player. Okay. The Guardian. Same dude. Revealed more reform transactions worth millions reported to quote. Oh, it's The Guardian. The Guardian. Pen and inks. Stinks. The Guardian, right, so they've come with... They, of course, hate reform, don't they? They, of course, hate Nige from the left, obviously. They're talking about that there's all sorts of other potential problems in the pipeline to do with money and funding. Bankers raise potential money laundering concerns involving senior party figures. There's another story later, probably get to it later when we do the websites, that Robert Jenrick's got an issue. It was actually, it's been in the news before that one. It was back when he was still in the Tories, back when he was running to be leader of the Tory party. Well, I suppose after, it must have been that period when Boris Johnson got cooed out. Or was it the one after Liz Truss got cooed out? Anyway, they happened very close to each other in time, didn't they? Anyway, we were Jenrick, old Bobby Jenrick. And Jenrick's jihadis, the Afghans, loads of Afghans he allowed into the country. His name was Wayne Broadhurst, Robert. His name was Wayne Broadhurst. During that period when he was trying to become the leader of the Tory party, he took a donation of like £100,000, big lump donation for £100,000. And it's alleged, I don't know, of course, I don't know one way or another, but the allegation is that a portion of that £100,000, like £37,500 of that £100,000, came from a foreign source, a foreign person, a foreign company, I don't even know exactly, but it was foreign in origin. That's the allegation. And that's not allowed. So that story's just been rumbling. Again, I have absolutely no judgment. I don't know one way or another. Again, it's one of those things. Could be really bad. Could be a scandal. Could be it's just not true and it's an absolute nothing burger. I don't know. So that's one with old Bobby Jenrick. And then there's another, others they're saying. They're not really disclosing many of the details here and in the other words. But they're saying there's others. And that the police themselves, the Metropolitan Police, the London Police, or the serious crime, you know, like the serious crime office is investigating it. All a bit of a worry. Now, I will say this to get some perspective. Obviously, it's a pile-on, isn't it? This is sort of, it's not wrong that it's the establishment that are trying to take reform down. Like the globalist, truly, truly anti-patriotic elements in our establishment that see even someone as milquetoast and weak-wristed and containment globo-homo as Nigel and Richard Tice, even that is far too extreme for them. That's far too right-wing for them. All those types of elements. Right? I see some cretin like Richard Tice and be like, no, he's too much of a patriot. All those things. It's not untrue that they're trying to gun for reform and take them all down, destroy them. That is true, isn't it? But if there's been any wrongdoing, investigate it and punish them. But I would also say this, now do everyone else. I've got no problem with you investigating reform as hard as possible. Good. Now do David Lammy. Yeah? Now do all the other MPs in Parliament. We're going to wash some laundry. Let's do everyone. But no. And I won't do that. Any investigations into David Lammy? All the money he's taken? Silly amounts of money, David Lammy. Just him. Just that one guy. The Deputy Prime Minister? No? No, you're going to leave him alone. Right. Right. So it is a stitch-up. I mean, it is a stitch-up on some level. I have got a small amount of sympathy for, like, your average salt-of-the-earth reform supporter activist voter who just hasn't necessarily woken up to restore yet, but they're a good person. They're trying to do the right thing for their country. They still think that reform is the best vehicle, and they've put time and energy into it. I've got sympathy for those people, absolutely. When I was in reform, those type of people, the grassroots activist people, they nearly all were, as I say, the salt of the earth. They were great people. They're patriots, really were. They just see all the problems in their country, and they're trying to do something about it. Trying to stand up and say the right thing, do the right thing. Good people, good people. So, you know, I do feel sorry for them where all this is playing out and it's just like sort of ruining the party a bit, or attempting to at this stage. And it is a fair argument from them to say, well, okay, now do the Lib Dems, now do the Greens, now do the Tories. And Labour, of course, all of them. Let's do a full cleaning of the house. Just David Lammy alone. Jules Brown. Who's Jules Brown, David? Dear David Lammy, who's Jules Brown? Who is he? Why did he give you loads of money? Was there any quid pro quo there? What were you expected to give him in return for those tens and tens and tens of thousands of pounds? Right. It's not fair. Yeah, welcome to the real world. Politics isn't fair. The world isn't fair. It's not even close to fair. Yeah. Sucks, doesn't it? No, I don't mean that sarcastically. It does. It's not fair. Trump hits out at NATO, then hails the love from its leaders. Okay. The Eye paper. Police launch investigation into £37,500 donation to Robert Jenrick campaign. Quickly then, Scotland Yard is now investigating a political donation made to Jenrick's campaign to become Conservative leader, the Eye paper learns. Investigation centres on claims that £37,500 came from foreign donor. UK election law forbids political donations from foreign sources. However, Jenrick has reportedly denied that he or campaign broke any electoral law and tells the Eye paper allegations are, quote, liars and, quote, entirely false. He claims that the establishment is determined to stop reform, where he is now Treasury spokesman, and says police have not contacted him. Met does not specify any individuals and confirms the investigation into, quote, donations connected to a political party's leadership campaign, quote. Extra, read all about it. Could be very, very nefarious and, like, total corruption. Could be a complete nothing burger and he's done nothing wrong. The Times, the venerable Times. Harry, the Duke of Hazard. Farage faces new questions over timing of tycoon's £5 million present. Yeah, just a little bit of detail, you know, like the timing of it. Remember, if you remember, before the last general election, even as much as a month out, or maybe as much as 6 weeks, I can't remember, not very long before the election, not very long at all, Nigel was still saying he's not going to stand. He's the honorary president of Reform UK, but he's happy to stay in that role. He doesn't want a role in frontline politics anymore. His part in history was, the Brexit referendum, and his best placed is just an ambassador for the party sort of role, rather than actually as an MP. he was saying that quite close before the 2024 election. Then, if you remember, just before, was it a month before or something? A few weeks out, he changed his mind. He just said, oh, no, actually, he didn't explicitly say this, but, oh, actually, because the polling in Clacton looks like it's a slam dunk for us. Actually, I'm gonna stand. That's what happened. So, it was only a few months before that he received £5 million. Then, like, 2 months, or is it? Or 3 months? Before that. So, in other words, easily within the 12-month period before you become a sitting MP where you have to declare everything. Now, some people have said, and this is all allegations, you have to be careful to say it's alleged that the allegations are, because otherwise it would be sort of, what, libelous or whatever. The allegations are, particularly from someone like Ben Habib, and I think Nigel's threatened to take Ben Habib to court over this. I'm not sure if he's going to, I haven't heard an update on that. Someone like Ben Habib and one or two others have alleged that money was more like for something other than just his security. It's to, as a payoff for, maybe, it's just the allegations are, a payoff for dumping the Brexit party for to get back into politics so that you're our man, our as in like whoever, Christopher Harbaugh or people behind him, his group of friends, his cabal, whatever, his cadre of friends. Nigel, the conversation over dinner at a gentleman's club or something might have been something like, look, Nigel, we know you don't want to get into front line politics anymore. You've said that, you've been clear about that, because it is sort of a real headache and it is a little bit dangerous even. Joe Cox, David Amis, it is dangerous and it is very, very hard work. You'll have the spotlight on you again and it's stressful. We get you don't want to do it. You'd much rather just sort of retire and make tons and tons of money and stuff and be a globetrotter and things. But we think you could be powerful. You could become the Prime Minister. And then because you're our friend, we've then got the very, very rich people like Christopher Harbaugh. Our friend is in number 10. That's in our interest. We want that. You're saying you don't want to do it. What if we gave you £5 million? Would you do it then? And no, I just like, done. Allegedly. It's just a hypothetical scenario. That's all I'm saying. That's a hypothetical scenario. I don't know, you know, if that's what's really happening. I'm just saying that's possible. That's what people like Ben Habib have said, you know. It's not just for security. It was something like that. Who knows? You know, and when it's a conversation, just a conversation, just whispers over cigars after the dinner in one of the lounges in a gentleman's club in London or whatever, I don't know. They're drinking their brandies and got cigars and there's no mics anywhere. And they can all be trusted, basically, to discretion over what they're talking about. Look, Nige, I know you don't want to do it, but what if, yeah, they give you a bit of money? What's your price, bro? Nige. Everyone's got a price, dude. Everyone's got a price. What, a million? What are we talking, a million? Come on, let's talk turkey. Come on, let's go. 2 million? 5 million. Sold, Crystal Harbaugh. Sold. And you're back in the game. And we have a game. Is that a scenario that played out? Nobody knows. I certainly don't know. The remnant of that tea has gone a little bit cold, so I'll move up to my backup water. This is water in this one. It's not a second cup of tea. Right. Burnham. I'll aim defence spending at British firms. It's the way it always should be, of course. Yeah. Like that's some sort of brilliant new policy. PM in waiting vows billions for critical security. It's the way it should always be, really, isn't it? Government contracts going to, largely anyway, going to firms in your own country. King Arthur. Arthur Ferry won a tennis game. Match, sorry, tennis match. All right, the Financial Times. Trump Lords, NATO summit, yeah. It's funny when the tabloids, particularly the tabloids, they make something out of absolutely nothing. It's been in some of the papers that Trump snubs Maloney. So I don't know if you know this. There's been a little bit of tension between Trump and Maloney, where on social media, one way or another, they've sort of thrown a little bit of shade at each other. Like he said, she at one of the last big summits, G7 or whatever it was, one of them. He said that she'd begged him to have a photo op. Like she, according to Trump, she'd come to him and said, look, please, 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 let's, at one point over this weekend or whatever, can we get a moment where it's just you and me sitting down together on a couch or something, and we're looking very serious, we're looking like serious statesmen or something like that. Or we're laughing it up like we're best friends, something like that, in front of all the reporters, and they can click, 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 and it'll be a great front page for Italy and for me, Maloney. Apparently she begged him to do that, and he did. And he said so on True Social, and she hit back going, no, that never happened, as if I would do that. Like, what are you talking about? And then he was like, no, it did happen. And anyway, there's just tension. And then this, like yesterday, I guess, it was yesterday. At one point, they've got all the NATO leaders lined up on stage in one big, like, phalanx there, like that. And Trump walks out in front of them all, sort of last, and goes and stands in the middle. And there you go, that's that image. The newspapers are like, Trump snubs Maloney. Trump walks straight by her without even giving her a glance. It's like, yeah, as he did to all the other leaders on that stage. It's not like he was greeting each one, putting a hand on their shoulder and shaking the hand of each one, and then when he gets to Maloney, just blanking her and moving on. No, not that. No. He just walked out on the stage, effectively blanking them all. It wasn't a case of recognising each one. It's not like he was going up to each one, doing a nod, doing a wink, like, you know. Oh, but he's blanking Maloney. And the Legacy Corporate mainstream view is so disingenuous. Such liars. Such liars. Okay. The Telegraph, Daily Telegraph. King Arthur won a tennis match. Rochdale rapist will be deported. Will he? Will he? Mahmood to change law. Will she? To change law to kick out gang leader if UK can meet Pakistan's demands. We shouldn't have to meet any of their demands. This article saying, I read it, saying that on Monday, this coming Monday, she is set to go before the House and tweak some of the law from the Immigration Act of 1971. Whether we have to actually meet any of Pakistan's demands, I just wouldn't be surprised if this doesn't happen. Just either it doesn't happen at all, or when she does speak to the House on Monday, it's just not much. It's just paper thin, nothing. She's like, we're going to look at the possibility of maybe, da, 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 and then it just doesn't happen. Nothing ever happens. Won't be surprised. Binface set to be Farage's main challenger. There was actually an article. Yeah. We'll talk about what is his name? Is it Harvey? John Harvey? Yeah, that's right. John Harvey. In the Mail, they do a little bit of a thing about him. Hooked on classic sitcoms, haunted by family tragedies. The truth about the real comedian behind Count Binface. It's a bit of a shame, really, to sort of dispel the mystique. But of course they're going to. Look. There you go. That's the dude. That's the real guy. John. His name's John. He's just a comedian. It said in that article he's worked for, or on the show, Have I Got News For You? And The Thick of It. And to be honest, I think his actual politics, not that he's going to be the MP, I really don't think so. I wouldn't put a penny on it, but his actual politics do seem to be sort of lefty-leaning and woke a bit, anyway. Well, if he worked on Have I Got News For You? And The Thick of It, Amando Arnucci is the thick of it. You get the idea, don't you? Like the Tories are the baddies, sort of a thing. And of course, someone like Reform or Restore, they're even more evil, that sort of thing. But as the Count Binface, First Baron Binface, go Binface, his politics are not really, aren't what it's about. It's a comedy character, isn't it? It's a novelty candidate. So it's not like he's actually going to push the agenda for sort of globalism or anything. He will say silly, funny things. That's what the character is. Again, I find it weird. I feel like people have lost perspective when they're like, oh, but John Harvey. Okay, Count Binface. Okay, fine. Here we go. But John Harvey's politics are X, Y, Z. You're missing the point. If you start talking like that and thinking about like that, this is just my opinion. You've missed the point. I don't think, I might be proven wrong, but I doubt at any point in this campaign, the Count Binface, First Baron Binface, is going to take that thing off and start talking as John Harvey and start talking seriously about his worldview and politics and the things he's going to do for Clacton should he be returned. He's playing a character. I honestly do think it's weird when, one, Nigel's trying to claim this is a serious by-election. No, it is not. Fundamentally, it's not serious. I heard he played Lord Buckethead as well. If anyone doesn't know, maybe there's some foreign people who don't know. In Britain, we've actually got a very long tradition of comedy, like novelty political candidates. We've had the Monster Raving Loony Party for years. Again, the people know they're going to lose their deposit. They know they're only going to get 10 votes, 30, 40 votes. They know that. It's not about trying to win. It's about lampooning the process. Right? That's why they nearly always stand in where there's a higher profile person standing. If it's some little rural constituency that no one cares about and no one famous is standing in it and no one standing in it is likely to be on the front benches or anything, then comedy candidates like this don't go there. It's when it's something like this, when it's going to be on TV, it's going to be all over, you know, like the leader of a party, even if it's an opposition party, you'll get comedy candidates standing in those. And there's all sorts, right? Just normal independent people. They'll dress up in some stupid furry outfit, some weird outfit. We've got a long tradition going back years and years and years. Again, the Monster Raving Loony Party. Even before that, you would get people that were just essentially silly. And anyway, before the Count Binface, First Baron Binface, go Binface, we had Lord Buckethead. A very, very similar thing. Just silly. It's just silly. And it is to poke fun at the whole process. So that Lord Buckethead was actually played by more than one person. I believe this is all right. No, like Duffman. More than one actor will play Duffman. Duffman can't die, just the actors who play him. And more than one person had played Lord Buckethead. And one of them was the same guy, John Harvey. And then I don't know if he fell out with the creators of Lord Buckethead, but for whatever reason, Lord Buckethead has been retired. Maybe someone else will play Lord Buckethead. Anyway, I guess this is John Harvey's reimagining, effectively, of Lord Buckethead. I can't believe we're talking about it even, really. Count Binface. Hashtag Binevitable. Hashtag Independence Day. All right, yeah, and in this article, it just says a little bit about his life and stuff, so it's not a complete mystery. Seems a little bit of a shame to me to sort of demystify the thing, but whatever. The media were going to do that. Unless you really tried to keep your anonymity, like Banksy or something. And not that, I don't think John Harvey ever has like genuinely made big efforts to remain anonymous. So it's not really much of a scoop, but there you go. I think he should talk more about sort of intergalactic policy. I think that would be funny. like what he would do for neighboring star systems and things. Because the character is that he's like from space or whatever. Oh, look. What's that? Oh, yeah, there he is as Lord Buckethead. That's back in 2017. Oh, let's see. Look, that'll be Theresa May. That's the Prime Minister. Right Honourable Theresa May on the stage. And Lord Buckethead. Yeah, that one, it looked like John Cleese is like the Black Knight from the Holy Grail. But obviously exaggerated to comedic lengths. I think people that are like upset with the tone of it. They're like, oh, it's profoundly unserious and we're facing existential threats. It's not cool. You're unserious to... Yeah. Yeah. If you're getting het up about that, you're failing to understand what is going on here, really, I do think. Nigel triggered a profoundly unserious thing, this by-election. I feel like it's poetic justice that he's going to face off against the Count Binface, First Baron Binface, go Binface. I think that's poetic justice. I think he's the perfect foil to show up the absurdity of the thing. My opinion, that's just my opinion. All right. Oh, it's already 10:02. Shall we have a quick look at some of the... did we even finish all the front pages? Of the Sun, here we go. My £12 million lotto win binned. Yeah, apparently this woman did get a winning lottery ticket, but I couldn't even be bothered to finish reading a few sentences about it. Sorry about the shopkeeper accidentally put the lotto ticket in the bin or something. I don't care. Classic tabloid slop. So let's just not spend a single moment on that. All right, they're the front pages. Let's have a look at our poll. What did we do in the poll today, Harry? You'll have to bring that up for me on my screen. Here we go. Oh, we put over 1,000 votes, knocking up 1,100 votes. We put, have you got Iran war fatigue? And the ayes have it. 75% of you say yes. 25% of you say no. I have noticed where I make content more or less every day, certainly including State of Politics, that a few weeks ago, maybe as much as a month ago, 6 weeks ago, videos about the Iran war, people stopped clicking on them to a noticeable extent. People stopped caring. A lot of people, not everyone, of course, stopped caring. Really stopped. Like, I just, okay. I'm saturated with Iran war news. I can't. And it seems to be simmering away anyway. There's nothing sort of exciting happening. You know, like the 82nd Airborne haven't parachuted onto Karg Island, so I don't care anymore. That sort of thing. A US aircraft carrier hasn't sailed through the Straits of Hormuz and been struck, and there's incredible images of all that, so I don't care anymore. Have you got Iran war fatigue? 3/4 of you say yes. I get it as well. I get it. I understand. There's only so long you can keep a particular story at like a sort of a fever pitch, isn't there? Even a big war in the Middle East. Even that. All right. Have a super quick look at the price of crude. It's gone up a little bit from yesterday, but not a giant amount, but a little bit. West Texas at 73, Brent just shy of 78. All right, there we go. So creeping up a little bit. Was there one or two stories, one or two other stories of note? Oh, Al Kearns, Labour MP Al Kearns and junior minister. Wasn't he the second minister at defence? Anyway, he was the last person, the last big beast, if you could even call him that, in the Labour Party that hadn't formally officially ruled out challenging Andy Burnham for the leadership. He was the last one. And yesterday, he did confirm that he's not going to run. He said, Al Kearns said, that he thought it was sort of in the party and the country's interest. There he is, that's his face. He thought it was in the party and the country's interest to have a leadership contest, even if he knew he was 100% going to lose, because it creates the debate. the country and the party get to have the debate, get to shine a little bit of a spotlight on Burnham's policies and views a bit more. Not a bad argument. Not a bad argument at all. But I guess he's, I don't know. This is really good. I guess he's just been offered a sweet job to just not do that. And so Burnham can have a coronation, quote unquote coronation, in like the next couple of weeks or next week and a half or whatever it is. And he's obviously just crumbled to that. That was too tempting for Mr. Kearns. They care more about themselves, they all do, than anything else. All about their career, what sweet job they can get in government. Okay. All right. Was there any particular other stories? Oh, there was one story that a poll came out showing that Burnham is not already, he hasn't even started a job yet, he's already only fractionally more popular than Keir Starmer in the country at large. Thanks for that, the people of Makerfield. Well done. Well done. Oh, this guy, this is a little bit of a big... This guy sexually assaulted and murdered his white wife. And apparently even years before that was like deeply violent and abusive to her. Many such cases. Elon Musk calls his... I'm reading this in real time here. Elon Musk calls historian Tom Holland a cuck for wading into a woke row over casting of black actress... What is it? I can never pronounce her name. Lupita Nyong'o. Nyong'o as Helen of Troy in The Odyssey. Yeah, Tom Holland, the historian, not the actor, Tom Holland. There's two Tom Hollands in the world, if you didn't know. Tom Holland's wrote a couple of good, very good books, I believe. One was In the Shadow of the Sword, about the real historical figure of the Prophet Muhammad. And the other one's Rubicon, all about Roman history. Both of which, very good reads, solid history. Okay. But he also has got a podcast, what is it, The Rest is History? And I've watched loads of that. You might think, oh, what, really? Oh, watching woke history stuff? Because most of it is fine, good, solid history. Like the majority of it. And the co-host is an interesting dude. And they're good speakers and they're interesting. Like a lot of this stuff, like a lot of histories you might read, most of it is fine. But then every now and again, they can't help themselves but squeak in some super woke politics. Like they're talking something, you know, they're talking about something like Lycurgus, the ancient king of Sparta, or whatever. They talk about anything and suddenly go, like Trump, Mr. Evil Trump, or something like that. If you can look past that, well, they'll be talking about, you get it, you could be talking about anything. They're talking about the French Revolution, suddenly just say a few quick words about the patriarchy and how bad it is. So anyway, Tom Holland is like an extremely weak man. Extremely weak, and in every sense. In every sense. So painfully, physically weak. Obviously so. Knock him over with a feather. Type Poindexter. But also, I would say politically, morally even, very, very, very paper thin, weak man. Weak, weak, weak man. I didn't even know he'd waded into the woke row over Lupita Nyong'o's casting. Makes sense, though. Classic Tom Holland thing to do. You know, all the stupid arguments. Actually, Helen is semi-fictional at best, and who knows if she was, and the translation, why can't you reimagine her as a sub-Saharan African? I don't know what he said, but I'm sure it'd be all crap like that. Elon Musk. King Musk the First, calling him a cuck. Funny, interesting. I have to look that up later today, exactly what the exchange was Yeah, Tom Holland, weak sauce. Pathetic, really. And yet, 80, maybe even 90% of his history is solid. Very, 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 very well researched and fine. There's nothing wrong with it. That's exactly like someone like Andrew Roberts. Sorry, the Lord Roberts of Belgravia. Same thing. You buy an Andrew Roberts book, 80, 90% of it plus. Fine, perfect. No problem. Factually accurate. On. But then there'll be a bit there. They'll just try and pervert your understanding of the world and reality. Just a little bit of the message thrown in there. Think they're being subtle, think they're being clever. Think people don't notice or realise. Alright. Have a look. On the sun, just one last bit of slop, just for the day. Why not finish on a bit of sun slop? This guy, he's at a jeweller's or whatever. There's like a diamond ring worth 35 grand. He just pops it in his mouth and swallows it. Like in an attempt to steal it. But they apparently, look, they so staff confronted him and he put his fingers down his throat, regurgitating the sparkler and gave it back. That's not going to be comfortable, is it? Swallowing a diamond ring and then regurgitating it up. A diamond cutting, probably cutting you all the way. Oh. I won't fancy that. All right, let's do on this day in history. You seem to like that. I seem to like that bit. Okay. On this day in history, down through the centuries, what happened? Right? On July the 9th, in 1401, the Turco-Mongo ruler, Timur the Lame, it's all the same person, destroyed Baghdad, killing 20,000 people. I've talked about Tamerlane before, haven't I? A few times. How his campaigns were some of the arguably the bloodiest military campaigns of all time, just in terms of pure body count. Of dead, that is. It's where the Mongols had interbred various Mongol hordes spread out from the Central Asian steppe. Some of them basically become Chinese. Some of them sort of become not exactly Russian, but sort of Siberian or something. Some of them become sort of Turkic, interbreed with sort of Middle Eastern Turkic people, Turco. So anyway, that's by the 15th century, Tamerlane's not like pure blood Genghis Khan Mongol. He's not that anymore, but anyway. And they say like his campaigns, maybe as much as sort of 5% of the entire world's population were killed in the campaigns of Tamerlane. Of course, the world's population is tiny compared to what it is today, even in the early 15th century, late 14th century. Far, 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 far fewer people by orders of magnitude, especially after the Black Death. Nonetheless, a good solid percentage of the entire world's population died under Tamerlane's campaigns. That were fascinating. All right. On this day in 1790, King Gustav III leads Swedish naval forces to victory over the Russian Baltic fleet during the second battle of, and I'm sure to mispronounce this, Svensksund, destroying and capturing one third of the Russian ships and ending the Russo-Swedish War. Yeah, like even by the end of the 18th century, Sweden was still a powerful country, one of the main players in Europe, absolutely. And that was one of the biggest battles of all time, among the biggest battle naval engagements of all time. As much as maybe 275 ships apiece, the Russians lose 50, 60 ships, 10,000 men. You know, obviously nothing on the scale of sort of stuff that went down in the Pacific War in World War II, but there's a few ancient sea battles that are bigger and stuff. But nonetheless, a giant pivotal naval battle, the biggest one ever to take place in the Baltic, I believe. Okay, if you're not Russian or Swedish, probably never heard of it. On this day in 1868, Louisiana and South Carolina are the last states to ratify the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, guaranteeing civil rights. As you can see, that's after the Civil War. That will be during the presidency of Grant, Ulysses S. Grant. Got long form content with Benjamin Boyce talking all about Ulysses S. Grant. Like over 2 hours. I think that was a really quite a long one. You want to know all about Ulysses S. Grant, both his early life, his military career, and then his presidency, and later life after his presidency? Check it out. On this day in 1893, surgeon Daniel Hale Williams performs the first successful open heart surgery when he repairs the torn pericardium of knife wound patient James Cornish without the use of penicillin or blood transfusion. 1893, that's early, isn't it? He successfully did it. Remarkable. Remarkable what the human body can stand, isn't it? Sometimes if you're sort of youngish and healthy, other than having been the victim of a knife wound. Remarkable. It really is. Okay. On this day in 1917, British battleship HMS Vanguard explodes at Scapa Flow. Obviously during World War I, isn't it? Due to an internal explosion caused by a faulty cordite explosives in the shells, killing 804 crew members. I've heard this before. I don't know about it in fantastic detail, but I have heard of it before. Terrible. Of course. Maybe its entire magazine went up. Rather than just like one, I can only imagine the whole magazine blew up. 804 people killed. Terrible. Is that a picture of the Vanguard itself? Okay. On this day in 1971, National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger, we are missing you, secretly visits the People's Republic of China to negotiate a détente between the US and China. Henry Kissinger only died a couple of years ago, didn't he? He lived to be over 100. Crazily old, Kissinger. It's difficult to argue whether he was some sort of political genius or in a complete scumbag. Christopher Hitchens wrote a book about what a psycho scumbag he was. I think I'm inclined to that view. But it's interesting nonetheless. You know when some people, you hate them and what they did, but they're so interesting that you can't help but sort of read more about them. Kissinger's one of those people for me. I don't like him. I wouldn't have done the things he did and said in his life. Nonetheless, interesting. Yeah, that Nixon era détente with China. Obviously, Maoist era communist China. Only a Nixon could have done such a thing, they said. Because Nixon was a classic cold warrior, really. He was, you know, all through the war, World War II, and his political career after World War II. I mean, he was Eisenhower's VP. So Nixon had been in around American politics ever since the war, just after the war. And his whole career, his whole political persona was he was like an ardent, staunch anti-communist. You know, if there's any communist to be found in America, in the American political system, Nixon will be one of those senators that will sit on a committee and try and get them. Staunchly anti-communist, Richard Nixon. So it's that type of person that might have the political capital to actually have a détente with Mao. You can trust me that I'm not going over there and giving anything away because I'm Nixon. Because I'm like the most anti-communist there can be, almost. And that sort of worked. It did sort of work. Nixon and Kissinger and Mao did sit down together later in the 70s. Because China at that point, US and China had been completely politically, diplomatically cut off from one another. And so Kissinger and Nixon sort of began the process of a thaw between them. Okay, it's an interesting bit of history, I think. I'm fascinated by Nixon. On my channel, got a long series on History Bro. Free, there's no paywall there, it's free. Got a long series. So many, many hours of me talking about nominally the Watergate scandal, but I'm actually talking about everything about Nixon, all things Nixon. I can't remember how many parts it was, five, eight, I don't know, quite a few hours of it. If you're interested in that, that's there. All right, On this day in 2002, the African Union is established in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, as African leaders replace the Organization of African Unity. South African President Thabo Mbeki serves as its first chair. Does it? Okay. On this day in 2017, Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi proclaims a victory over Islamic State forces in Mosul. Mosul, sort of more in the north of Iraq. Isn't Mosul where, isn't that where one of the ancient Assyrian cities, basically Mosul is basically built on top of one of the ancient Assyrian cities there. Anyway, that's an aside. The Iraqis and the Syrians, among others, Kurdish forces, defeating the Islamic State. Probably for the best, not that a lot of those forces are a great deal better than the Islamic State in various ways. But still, the Islamic State, difficult to come to any other conclusion that they were scumbags that should be wiped from the earth, really, isn't it? All right. Okay, should we do, that was the last one, should we do our Rumble Rants and Super Chats? Should we do that? Let me do this with my mic so I can see the left-hand side of my screen. Okay, our Rumble Rants, will global church history being at number one? No. I believe I might have seen him in the YouTube, though. Harry, can you bring up my YouTube Super Chats so I can check that? Yes. The global church history is in there. But we always do the Rumble Rants first, so we'll do it first. Sigglestone 17, regular contributor and commenter and things on Lotus Eaters. And funny on Twitter as well. Got a good sense of humour. You say, in fact, sometimes you say things that are a bit too spicy to read out on the Bow Show. So what do you say? I think you're not doing anything too blue or spicy. You say, it definitely undermines Trump when he says that about Iran, but then calls Japan an Islamic Republic. Great diplomacy, Don. That won't have consequences. And good morning, Bo. I didn't know that Donald ever called Japan an Islamic Republic. I didn't know that. That one passed me by. Did he do that? Okay. But yeah, Donald Trump's style of diplomacy, if you want to call it that, is unconventional. I mean, it definitely is unconventional. Is it effective, though? Sometimes it really is, isn't it? In fact, quite often it really is. Not always. The way he handled the Greenland thing so far seems to have been counterproductive. So far, seems to have been counterproductive for US interests. The thing in Iran doesn't seem to have been managed or handled all that well. Although, I was watching Dr. Steve Turley yesterday, and he was making the argument that everything, this is the sort of take Steve Turley would have. He was saying that everything that the United States has done since February in Iran, it's all a plan to have ebbs and flows, peaks and troughs in when there's action going on and when there's not, and allowing Iran to come back at certain points in order that their war material is brought out so that America can destroy it. And it's all some great master plan from the White House and the State Department and the Pentagon. And trust the plan, bro. It's all perfect. And Iran just keeps falling into the US traps again and again and again. That's Steve Turley. Maybe true. I don't think so. Doesn't feel like that. Could be true. Historians might look back at this in years to come and say America was playing 5D chess the whole time and it worked perfectly in the end. We don't know. But Trump's diplomacy is unconventional, isn't it? All right. The next one, I think it's just a membership thing when it comes up in red. Yeah. Tyranny No One gifted one subscription. Oh, thank you. That's very good. To somebody called Jabbery308, and a bit further up I can see they did it again to Intelligentsia. So thanks for that, Tyranny Number One. Okay, and the next super chat, Luke Stewart 91. G'day, Bo. Oh yeah, g'day, mate. how good. And everyone, hope you all have a great weekend as of tomorrow. Friday the 10th, my birthday. Oh, happy birthday for the 10th. I'll be spending 3 days fighting in Kabulshire. I don't know what that word is. Kabulshire. At the Abbey Medieval Festival. Oh, that sounds cool. That sounds cool. I like reenactments. I think there's a Tewkesbury thing, isn't there? The Battle of Tewkesbury reenactment anniversary thing this weekend. I think Luca was talking to me about it. Kabulshire. I feel like I should know what that is. Is that like a specific type of jousting or something? I feel like I should know. I'm sorry. Sounds cool, though. Sounds good. And happy birthday for the 10th. Okay. Luke again says, I will admit, I did like Cool and Dan's talk about, maybe that's a typo there, you've written. I did like Cool and Dan's talk about Bumham, saying that Labour has now had 3 different leaders with the socialist Corbyn, or it must be leaders, with the socialist Corbyn, the robot queer Stalin, and now the man of the North. Was it, do you mean? Oh, cool. You must have meant Carl. Carl and Dan's talk. Okay, it's all making sense. Sorry. Carl and Dan do their sort of political talks, don't they? I think they're behind the paywall, are they? On lotusleaders.com. Do consider signing up for as little as £5 once a month in membership. Yeah, Dan and Carl doing just sort of one-off once a week or so political talks. So, yeah. All right. Local mosque futurism. Oh, you were the guy who claimed you would get up super early in the morning to beat global church history. Five minutes past 9 a.m. No cigar, sir, I'm afraid. No, I don't blame you, though. It would take a superhuman effort to beat global church history, certainly on any sort of consistent basis. It's unlikely. Anyway. Local mosque futurism says, the Swedish Empire is so interesting because even at its zenith, their resources and population are always weaker than their rivals. They were just built different. Great leaders, great organisations. Yeah, the story of the Swedish Empire through, what, the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th century. Yeah, a bit like the British Empire in the sense that, just punching way above their weight. Yeah, in terms of population, industry, all sorts of things. But they were built different. They just had a great sort of work ethic. They had a great sort of quite a very strong sort of political system. Quite strong, homogenous society, of course. The Swedes punching above their weight in the medieval, late medieval period, early modern period. Absolutely. Okay, and the last rumble rant today is from Dragon Lady Chris, who says, Andrew Johnson, not Grant. Oh, fair enough. 1868. Wasn't there a presidential election in 1868 where Grant got in? Is that right? Can that be right? Or was it 70? Can't remember off the top of my head. But okay, you say Andrew Johnson. Fair enough. Fair enough. Hands up. Sure. Not Grant. Oh, you say that. Sorry, I should continue just reading your thing. You say Grant didn't take office until 1898. Sorry, Bo. No. Apologies. Do correct me. Honestly, if I say anything factually incorrect, tell me. I would like to know. I hate people that try and pretend they didn't get something factually wrong when they just did. That's terrible. I think that's terrible. You know, like the 2 or 3 times I've got something factually wrong, right? There was that murder up in Northern Ireland where I'd only saw a few seconds of the clip and I thought the victim was black and he wasn't. I just got it wrong. I just said it wrong. Next day, full retraction, 100%, hands up. That time I got Hugh Edwards and Eamon Holmes mixed up. Hands up, yep, got it wrong, sorry. So, okay, it was Andrew Johnson, not Grant, that was president in 68. Good. All right. The YouTube ones. Global Church History, in at number one, reigning, defending, and still. Only one factoid this morning, though. You tell us, today in 1540, Henry VIII divorced Anne of Cleves. I'm actually doing a series all about Henry VIII right now on Epochs, my history theme show behind the paywall. And the last episode, last Sunday's episode, was the period where he marries Anne of Cleves and then very quickly annuls that marriage and then very quickly has Thomas Cromwell's head chopped off for advising him poorly and as a scapegoat for all the problems with the dissolution of the monasteries. That was last Sunday. So that's the last epoch that's on the website is that. 270 odd episodes, hundreds and hundreds of hours of content. It's a good deal, £5 a month. All right. Thanks, Global Church History. Yeah, Anne of Cleves. The Flanders mayor. They both didn't like each other. When they finally met each other, he said that she smelt and she looked horrible and she was ugly. And she apparently sort of recoiled when she first saw him. He's like, oh, he's way older and fatter than people told me. He's got a gammy leg. It's like infected and stuff. They both didn't like each other. So anyway. All right. If you want more detail about that, it's there. Okay. Tiger, spelt T-Y-G-R-8. Tiger, thanks for super chat, says... It says, I don't have Iran war fatigue. I have Israel fatigue. Fair enough. Based. You know you're not a good... You know you're not a good people when you keep making Hitler look like... I can't finish reading that. Not that... because of T's and C's. Because we might get a strike or a warning or even just yeeted off of YouTube. It's not that I don't appreciate the super chat and even the sentiment. I can't. It would get the channel in trouble. It's a shame. People say, oh, coward. This the game. There's parameters and rules to this game. I'm afraid. Can't just say anything. If I finished reading that out, I don't think I'd get a knock at the door from the police, but YouTube would have an issue with it. They would have an issue with that. It's my job to try and not get strikes and warnings or the channel yeeted. Okay. Yeah, moving on. Max Robe. What have you put here? Lions lolly gobble Wait, is this a thing where... If I read it out, I'm saying something. I'll just read it out. I don't care. I think those are funny anyway. What are you saying here? It's like you've put lions lolly gobble chock bombs for the Frisians. Emily for Restore says, how much Islamist pounds is behind Greens today? Good question. Yeah. Let's have a deep dive into the Green Party's finances, shall we? Yeah. See if there's anything nefarious or dodgy there. Yeah. Where's Moffin Ali getting his money from? Where's David Paulden getting his money from? Okay, Emily Forrestor again says, YouTube wouldn't let me post factually about IRGC. Yeah. YouTube, just a Rumble Rant or Super Chat or just in the chat or on YouTube. There's loads of things it won't allow you to do and say. Yeah, loads. Yeah. You've got keywords. If you type that, it's just nope. Be aware of that. A lot of people say, oh, you've made a channel. You've got a channel on YouTube. And then you see people in your chat saying, why have you blocked me? Or why are you censoring what I'm saying? No, it won't be the person. It'll be YouTube doing that. You can't handle what I'm saying in the chat. No, it won't be us. It really won't. Probably. It'll be YouTube. You've typed something, YouTube just automatically says, no, you can't do that. Can't say that. It's getting more and more and more censorious as well. Another one from Emily from Restore says 12 Shias on a global mission. KR8882 says, are you going to mention Rupert on Joe Rogan? Oh, yeah. So, because this show is really supposed to be about the legacy corporate mainstream media news, and they're just not mentioning that, of course. But, yeah, I can still talk about it, yeah. So, It happened yesterday, or it dropped yesterday evening, I believe, was when I first saw it yesterday evening. So last night I watched probably about 2/3, because it's quite long. It's over two, well, not long, long for Joe Rogan, but it's like 2 hours plus, isn't it? It's over 2 hours. And I only had a relatively small window of time yesterday evening to watch it. I put it on times 1.5 speed, and I got through about 2/3 of it. So I thought it was interesting. I mean, it's a Rupert Lowe interview, so I didn't see, I didn't hear or see anything that was like a real bad clanger from Rupert Lowe. Like, oh God, why is he saying that? I didn't see anything like that. It seemed pretty solid, actually. Again, I've still got another probably half hour, maybe even as much as 40 minutes left to watch, which I will do. But yeah, they were just talking about, he was talking about the rape gang inquiry for most of it. And Joe Rogan saying like, how is that, how has this come about? Like, what's going on? Rupert Lowe just explaining, yeah. Everything from sort of the EU to Windrush to the Labour Party, the mainstream media ignoring it. The mainstream media have basically ignored it. The rape gang inquiry. Well, and the actual crimes themselves. And it goes back years and years and years. So, yeah. I mean, maybe tomorrow. How about that? Maybe tomorrow, once I've finished watching the last third or so of it, I'll talk about it in a bit more detail tomorrow, if you like. You can bet your bottom dollar the legacy corporate mainstream media won't be talking about it. It doesn't fit their globalist agenda, does it? Somebody talking about Mirpuri, Pakistani grooming and rape gangs. Torture and rape gangs. Torture, paedophile rape gangs. Yeah. Tatum2733 says, mark my words, oil crisis before December.
Okay.
Tatum2733 is calling it. That's his prediction. Maybe. We'll see. I feel like a lot of the world's oil markets have adjusted, or at least began to sort of profoundly adjust where they're sourcing their crude from. Like where giant amounts of crude oil flowed through the Straits of Hormuz on oil tankers, particularly to the east, to places like China and even Taiwan and stuff. That where all this has gone on, they have started to source their crude and natural gas from other places because the Straits of Hormuz is too volatile and is likely to stay volatile for some time, one way or another. But maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. The crisis before December, you say. All right. Pope John Edgar IV, that's their name, says, I tune in daily, if only for the on this day. Good morning, sir. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I like doing that bit. You guys seem to like me doing that bit. Thanks for the super chat, sir. James Lee Pevenhole says, 9th of July, USAAF deny finding a disc with the US Air Force. USA Air Force, deny finding a disc on the Brazel Ranch in New Mexico. They tell Brazel, is this the Roswell thing? They tell Brazel to say it was the wreckage of a weather balloon frame. That's Roswell, isn't it? Yeah. On lotuseaters.com for free, freemium in its entirety, not behind the paywall, there's a long form bit of content with me and I mentioned it yesterday, didn't I? Me and Devon Tracy, a.k.a. Atheism Unstoppable, Fear the Roo. It's only like a couple of weeks old, 2 or 3 weeks old, talking about UFO. All the history and modern UFO, UAP phenomenon. Everything from Roswell to the Tic Tac and more. Bob Lazar. Two sceptical guys talking seriously about it. If you're interested in that, it's there, it's free. LotusEaters.com. Okay. You're saying it's the anniversary of the US Air Force trying to intimidate a normal person into accepting a lie about... Oh, no, it might not be a lie. Okay. Last two here. Savrix says, the really bad guys are using angry blacks and self-guilty whites as revolutionaries to create a, quote, permanent consuming class, quote, all seeded centuries ago. Oh, yeah. Quite possibly that's one reading of history. Seeded centuries ago. I mean, an argument can be made. Okay, and last one. Tatum 2733 says, the US is nearing operational minimum in Oklahoma. The US is nearing operational minimum in Oklahoma. I'm not sure exactly what you mean, what you're referring to there. Oklahoma? Is that the base of the B2 Spirit? Oh, I thought that was Missouri, maybe. Operational minimum. What exactly? I've heard that term. Is that just where they're running out of munitions or whatever? I'm sorry, Tatum. I can't really give you much of a response to that. I'm not 100% sure what's being said there. All right. Okay. That's the show. It's now exactly 9:30 in the AM British Summer Time on Thursday, the 9th of July in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. Really, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. Without you guys, it's not a thing. It's just not a thing, is it? This is your show. It's for you. I am merely your humble host. All right, try and make the best of the day ahead, if you can. I know it's not always easy when you've got a job and family and all sorts of stuff that you've just got to do. If you've got free time, any free time, and you can use it as you see fit, use it wisely. Try and do something valuable with your time. Don't waste it, because you've got a finite amount of it, and you're probably less than you think. You'll never have this day again in history. You'll never have this day again in your life. A finite number of days on this earth. Try and make them count if you can. All right, without being too preachy about it. Till tomorrow morning.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.